Our annual list of the 50 most influential people in sports business is out this week, topped by three league commissioners. Our executive editor and publisher, Abe Madcore, joins me to break down the list. Then our motorsports writer, Adam Stern, is in to talk about the long-awaited rollout of NASCAR's new sponsorship model, headlined by four familiar brands. Those and whatever else comes up once we get talking here in the newsroom of Sports Business Journal. I'm Bill King, and this is First Look. Well, if you're a regular listener of First Look, you know we usually end the podcast by bringing in our executive editor and publisher, Abe Madcore, to talk about what we're watching around the sports business. But we're going to start this week because this week we roll out our most influential list, which always generates a lot of conversation around the business. That'll be the case again this year. Abe, what jumped out about the list for you this year?
Well, as you know, I mean, first off, Bill, I mean, the list is decided through countless meetings and discussions. We do a lot of research. We talk to outside sources. And as you know, because you've been in them,
people go off the top rope on occasion.
Right. And we have a lot of like newsroom debate and a lot of newsroom meetings. And then we rank them and revote and vote again and cut up the list and start all over again. And it's not an exact science. And, you know, people can look at this year's list, Bill, and say, well, boy, that's kind of fairly predictable. Roger Goodell, Adam Silver, Rob Manfred. But, you know, we look at 50 people who we think are having at this time and going forward really profound influence on the business of sports and the future of sport, whether that's sport on the field or behind the scenes. And so we're really heavy on our commissioners this year. I think we're heavy on our media companies this year at the top of the list because we see the power within the league offices and within the media companies paying for the rights and distributing the product. Mm-hmm. And so that's the top line for me.
Yeah, and I thought what it got me thinking about was we used to go round and round about this, right? I used to always argue, how can you put a commissioner number? I've always said, we can't have a commissioner number one. The commissioner works for the owners. If the owners wake up one morning and they want to get rid of the commissioner, they can. But the commissioner can, in very rare cases, the commissioner can only in the rarest of circumstances get rid of an owner. So how could it be? Well, you know, I think this speaks a little bit to the changing face of ownership. And I think ownership has, for so many owners, become a little less about the league and a little bit less about day-to-day league business. You know, we've talked to people, both of us have talked to people who said the league meetings have changed so much. Those owners coming in a day or 2 days before a meeting and sort of working the politics and counting the votes and figuring out how to move things forward and being involved in lots of different things across league business. There's a handful of those still, and you'll find them on this list, but there's not, I don't think, quite the number that there used to be. And I think as a result, they're involved in, there's no question. Look, they're still on committees. They still do all those things. And there are certain ones, Jerry Jones, for example, that do have a finger in almost everything that goes on in a league. But I think we're seeing less and less of that.
But let's be honest, owners have a lot of authority.
They still have the juice, the final authority.
It's hard to pick one of them.
That's right.
And so the broad purview of the commissioners, and another point that you made, these commissioners, whether it's Goodell, Silver, Manfred, Bettman, Garber, even Jay Monahan, have great support amongst their constituencies right now.
They do.
And there's not a lot of fissures in ownership that we see across leagues. And that played a role in our decision-making. Mm-hmm. Now, when you see Roger Goodell, are you looking at him as the most influential person in sports business? You know, you could argue no, but at the same time, his purview and the vast decision-making authority he has and the vast decision-making authority on the agenda of the NFL and that trickle-down theory in other sports is pretty profound.
And it's been a big rebound year. I mean, you look at where he was last year. I mean, it's a big rebound.
It's a big rebound. I mean, he's up two spots, but I'm just saying visibly, perception-wise, PR-wise, the last 2 years, 3 years, he was getting hammered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm looking at it more forward-thinking because a collective bargaining agreement that if you read the early numbers, they're way away from a deal. But if you're able to see that maybe they could stretch into 17 games, they could stretch out the playoffs through February.
Yeah, there might be a remake on the horizon.
It could totally remake sports And not just sports entertainment. You think the Oscars loves to go against the Super Bowl in the last week of February, which is a report out there? Yeah. No. So, you know, Goodell and the NFL owners are basically taking their elbows and making, spreading them out, saying, we're going to carve up more of the calendar for us. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's a fascinating element. You know, Rob Manfred could have easily been number two on this list to me. And there was a lot of support for that because of his aggressive ability. He hasn't really done it so much so, but to unilaterally change the game.
And again, we're going to see in this as we come into this next thing. CBAs are watersheds so often. And so often is the wrong way to phrase it. Some CBAs become watersheds, and it feels like this one could be for baseball.
Yeah, I would agree. And like, so there's some other ones, you know, for me, the women's national
team. That's the one I was going to raise, number five.
I thought they influenced so much of the discussion all year, mm-hmm. from gender and pay equity to, I think, just being, you know, as motivational business, pop culture, you know, personas that were throughout the calendar year. And so they influence a lot within the soccer universe. They influence a lot within, like we said, the pay discussion.
Yeah, and beyond women's soccer, the soccer universe. You're exactly right. I mean, you know, you think about major soccer games. You know, you think about friendlies that were played around the country where those women showed up and made appearances. That moved the needle. You know, I think there were probably in some cases more people there to see them than actually would have been to see the game.
And I thought you also saw residual result on other women's sports. NWSL was pretty strong. I thought that WNBA had some strength. There seemed to be a little bit more emphasis around women's sports after June, and this team won and was so compelling, whether, you know, you were with them or outside the United States and you were rooting against them potentially. But they had a big persona.
They did. And they took a stand. And we hear more and more about brands being interested in that in the world that we cover.
I'm fascinated by Jerry Jones. You mentioned him. If I have one owner and someone argued, well, the Cowboys aren't going to make the playoffs. I'm like,
it doesn't matter.
I said, the Cowboys aren't. Jerry Jones is so much more influential than just the Cowboys. I mean, what he's able to been doing with Legends and where Legends has been able to influence business in Las Vegas, in Los Angeles, in other parts of the world. Legends is a very strong, big, growing company. And if anybody can make things change in a business, whether it's the NFL or even outside the NFL, you want Jerry Jones on your side. Other things that are new that may attract some interest, Vince McMahon, first time he's on this list and pretty high at number 26. Yeah. You know, wherever I go, people still want to learn and watch not just the WWE, but what he's doing with the XFL. And he may not be on this list ever again, but for right now, at this point in time, his wrestling properties are very valuable entertainment inventory and programming. Mm-hmm. And the X has a chance to remake
it. Look, it's football, okay? It's American contact football. And as much as we see some concerns and fissures from a grassroots standpoint, the fact is right now, if you look at what's gone on, especially look at this season with the NFL and viewership there, you know, I think that, that this is an interesting time to launch another league.
Who stood out to you?
You know, LeBron at number 10. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had conversations over the year about athletes and whether they even make the list. To see an athlete not only make it, but make it that high, I think says a lot.
Well, we thought he really represented and was the model figure for athletes as pop culture influencers and content creators, mm-hmm. and really social forces. And, you know, we could have put Durant on there. We could have put Brady on there. We could have put a lot of people on there.
But he's the one.
But he's the one. And to your point, so yes, we made a statement this year that it's very important. We're going to see this trend continue and accelerate, and he's the one.
Well, and this is different because remember in previous years, we were talking about Jordan. We were talking about, you know, all sorts of guys, and it always came back to the same thing. Well, they're the product. They're part of the product. They're you know, nothing happens without them, and they absolutely move the needle wherever they go. But it's still as part of the product. And to me, LeBron is different. LeBron is creating things outside of what goes on the court, and he's using his fame and his celebrity and his stature and his money to do all that. And all of that came from basketball. But what he's doing is not just basketball. And I think that gets really interesting. And not only that, look at what the other players are doing as a result. Look at all the people who we hear that say players want to talk about incubators. Players want to talk about this. Players want to talk about that. They look at their next stage of life, not just investing in something, but owning something. Mm-hmm. And I don't think you can fail to make the connection between that and what we've seen the path we've seen LeBron take. Again, different from Michael. Michael with the Jordan brand, absolutely, you know, spinning off from Nike, absolutely massive. And I don't know that LeBron's companies will ever grow to be what the Jordan brand is. But the Jordan brand didn't start from scratch, right? And these companies that these athletes are talking about will.
Other surprises for some newcomers. This one will probably get the most eye rolls or head shakes. Governor Gavin Newsom from California. We had a lot of debate internally in our newsroom. You know, many of you felt, I believe you too, Bill, that without Gavin Newsom and other political leaders in California pushing for this name, yeah, image, and likeness bill in that state and getting it signed by him, that the NCAA would never have reacted as aggressively as it has.
No question.
And it wouldn't have set the agenda like it has. So he's on our list. And Roger Penske makes it for the first time for his role as someone who I would say reimagine, reinvent, and propel IndyCar to great heights. And he's so well respected. So now he has IndyCar and NASCAR, really, to me, a strong voice in motorsports. So those are some newcomers to the list. Any other names stand out to you?
Yeah, and it's not just one name. I mean, it was interesting the way we had a sort of look at last year when we were looking at the impact of sports betting. We took it a couple of ways, right? We named our number one, which was the American sports bettor, because we really thought it was hard to find that one person that encapsulated it all. We also had Jim Murren from MGM, because MGM had made such big waves with all those league deals. This year, when you came to me and said, well, who should be where, I saw the much more equivalency there, but always for different reasons. And so I like that we have Jim Murren is back. We also have Matt King from FanDuel. We have Joe Asher from William Hill. And they're all on for different reasons. Murren is there because it's still MGM and it's still all those contacts, you know, across the leagues. But Matt King, FanDuel is killing it. You know, they absolutely are killing it. They have the horsepower from the standpoint of the product. They have the consumer base from the standpoint of those millennial males who are betting. So, you know, they've done a lot there. The Meadowlands, tons of reasons to watch them. And then you had Joe Asher at William Hill, who has really been in many cases a thought and policy leader. When Joe wants to take a stance on something, he digs in and he fights. And that's had an impact really on how a lot has gone and as we've seen this evolve. And also, again, it's William Hill. It's that traditional UK brand making a place here in the United States, which is, you know, I think that's another point to watch in that space.
I'm glad you like them together at slot number 31, I believe, because I'm sure they're not going to be loved being grouped together.
Yeah, but no. We just put three competitors in the same slot. No question about that. Yeah, exactly. Well, they can fight it out.
You know, on the last spot, I'll just see a newcomer to the list at number 50 is Cynthia Marshall. And, you know, we had a lot of discussion in our newsroom about that as well. But, you know, people who have been around her, people who have seen her, people who have been engaged with her at the NBA office, at the Mavericks, even outside of the NBA world, really rave about her ability to influence corporate culture and talent diversification in the sports business, which we all know we need a lot more of. She has been really a voice for a lot of teams and leaders in sports to learn and listen from about, like I said, diversifying their executive ranks and their overall organization and changing the culture to be more inclusive in a number of these organizations. So you talk about influence, she's wielding a tremendous amount of influence. That's why she's at our number 50.
1 to 50, all interesting, all worth taking a look at. We're not going to take you through it spot by spot, but we gave you a little taste. Go take a look at the list. Let us know what you think.
Please do, and let us know your feedback. Thanks, Bill.
All right, thanks, Abe. If you're a Sports Business Journal reader, you may have heard of Sports Atlas. Sports Atlas is an exciting new data service from Sports Business Journal that'll help you navigate the sports business. While the official launch is next year, we're inviting you, our First Look listeners, to an exclusive sneak peek webinar. You'll have two chances to see the webinar on December 18th and 19th. You can register at sportsatlas.com, and we'll add a link in the show notes as well. We can't wait to show you everything Sports Atlas can do for your business. We've been hearing for more than a year and a half about a new sponsorship model that NASCAR will introduce next season, designed to carve out designations for four premier sponsors rather than the single series sponsor that's been familiar in stock car racing for, well, about as long as there has been stock car racing. Last week, we learned the identities of those four sponsors, and they won't surprise you unless, of course, you were expecting that a new model might also mean new money. Our Adam Stern has a look at what's new and not so new on that front in our issue this week. Adam, what's new and not so new?
Well, what's new is obviously the model itself. You know, it's certainly a big deal for a series that since 1971, you know, really helped pioneer the title sponsorship right. model of that has since become.
With, of course, Winston.
Right. For several decades until Nextel took over around 2004. So it's a huge deal that they have switched over. And they ended up with four blue chip companies that do a lot of activation, have big marketing budgets, and that's right. certainly good for them in Coke, Geico, Bush, and Xfinity.
Right.
You know, I think certainly they ended up with four companies that are, you know, consumer facing. These are companies that do innovative things that like to reach out to consumers. So there are a lot of positives to draw right. upon. And it's going to be interesting to see how they activate these deals kind of in a new way. You know, some of the assets are the same, but they're kind of slicing and dicing them differently now that it's not just one title sponsor. And we could talk more about that. For example, right. the championship race and all-star race will have all four brands involved, but they won't have a single title sponsor. We've never seen something like that. I'll be interested right. to see how that works. Of course, at the same time, some people yesterday did, of course, note that, you know, there were no brand new companies to the sport that stepped up as a premier partner. Now, I think, you know, look, there's several ways to look at it. On one end, you could say it'd be nice to have had some come in. And NASCAR did talk to some companies, as we note in our story,
right.
like Verizon, who is in motorsports with Team Penske and used to be the IndyCar title sponsor,
right.
but is not in NASCAR currently. But at the same time, you know, they do, first and foremost, they got four and they have room for five. So they still have room to try and add one more. It'll be interesting to see if that happens in the coming years. It would have taken a really big commitment for a company because from what we understand, they're asking around $15 million annually.
Right.
So for a company just coming out of nowhere, it would have been great, but it's not necessarily a shocker it didn't happen. But I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, in the second tier and the third tiers. And then also eventually, again, could they add a new partner in the fifth tier?
Right.
They do have some companies that have come to the sport newly. For example, they have a new vodka sponsor that came in that's going to be, I believe, a third tier part. So they have some companies coming in, and Darrell Wolfe, who helped lead this project for NASCAR, noted that to us. So he didn't look at it as a negative at all. So I think they came out with four good brands. There's no doubt about that. These are four big companies, some of the biggest companies in the world. When we talk about Anheuser-Busch, Comcast, Coca-Cola, Geico is one of the biggest spenders in sports. We know that.
Right.
So they came out with four good brands, but obviously I think there were some people in the sport that would have loved to see a new company step in.
Right. If you think about it, like, it comes down to the math. Now, of course, there's other issues there. There's marketing support. There's, you know, what are these companies going to put behind you and help you forward the sport? But just from the sort of the balance sheet perspective, you know, ideally you have to have Geico, Coca-Cola, Bush, and Xfinity add up to more than A, more than they were paying before, and B, more than they were paying before, plus what goes out the door in terms of a title sponsorship, right? Do you think that's happening?
I think it's really unclear
right.
because all these sponsors were already official partners.
Exactly.
And so what one thing that I think is very fair to probably speculate is that these companies didn't all spend $15 million in incremental revenue. I mean, that's unlikely. They were, for example, Coca-Cola was already spending more than $10 million annually. So if you're asking $15 million and a company like Coca-Cola is already spending 12, you know, it might only be $3 million
right.
in incremental revenue.
Right.
So now, again, we don't know the exact terms yet. So it'll be interesting to see if those things can come out over time, whether we can report them and get those numbers. But certainly, yes, you're right. They are losing $20 million from Monster. Now, it's not fully $20 million because Monster actually is going to stay, as from what we understand, a secondary partner.
Okay.
So there'll be, you know, a couple million dollars there, I think, for NASCAR. And Monster did increase their spend with Chip Ganassi raising their team. So they kind of have spent as much money in the sport next year as they did this year. So from an overall ecosystem perspective, NASCAR and the sport came out all right there. But yes, you're right. I mean, $20 million is going to be reduced significantly down to a couple million, most likely maybe like five for a second tier. I think they're still figuring out the second, third tier. That's in part why they didn't announce them yesterday. Monster's Mitch Covington at the NASCAR banquet in Nashville did
right.
confirm that they're going to come back next year as the official energy drink. So yeah, I think it'll over time, it'll be interesting to see if these numbers can come out and whether we can figure out whether they got as much incremental revenue or even close as they were getting from Monster. But I think NASCAR would probably also say that this is a long-term thing for them and that, you know, the first year may not be indicative of how good they'll be doing in the third year.
This is, you know, one of the things that's really interesting or always been interesting to me about sponsorships around NASCAR is it's the series, it's the teams, and it's the tracks. And they all have to be healthy in order for this to in order for the sport to be healthy. What does this mean to that? What does this model now, particularly that we know the companies, mean to that?
Yeah, I think, look, I mean, also you got to have the media partners as well, right, as far as Fox and NBC. I think for them, what it does is gives them, you know, more potentially contracted revenue that they know is going to be devoted to them from these larger companies. I think the biggest thing...
When you say them, you mean NASCAR itself or you mean teams and tracks as well?
Well, teams are not involved in this. So, right. So tracks and media partners are involved in this and these buys. So I think for the sport overall, it's kind of made it more of a one-stop shop for their largest partners. And it's made it less complex. So for a company like Geico or Anheuser-Busch, all their deals now across media, tracks, and league are now one contract. And that's made it easier for them, right, to navigate the sport. We talked to Nick Kelly from Anheuser-Busch, and he noted that if you look at it from the perspective, they now have deals across pretty much every track in NASCAR. And they're, from them, that's a big step up. They didn't previously have that much signage at track.
Right, right.
They're planning to use that to even integrate some of the different brands, even beyond Busch Beer, even though that's the lead brand. They're looking at doing things with seltzer and wine as well, because they now have all these assets.
Right.
And the way Nick Kelly from Anheuser-Busch described
it. And they could even do that regionally if you're talking about tracks.
Correct.
Right.
And the way Nick Kelly from Anheuser-Busch described it to us was he's kind of looking at it as almost he did a league deal with a stick and ball, from the sense of he's now got signage at every venue. And so it's almost as if he did a deal with every team in a stick and ball, you know, as if they, you know, their home arenas, things like that. So it gave the brands certainly an easier way to navigate the sport. I think, you know, again, the teams aren't involved in this. I think the biggest thing for the teams was just to not have sponsors leave them to sign up for this new model. And that's pretty much fine,
right,
because Busch Beer is a team sponsor, but they're a very big company, Anheuser-Busch, and Geico is a team sponsor as well. But they, you know, are, again, a very big company. So I think the teams came out all right there. As far as the tracks and the media partners, I think it just helps them with kind of, you know, moving them in a set situation where they have more guaranteed revenue. They know what's coming in from their biggest partners, et cetera. But, you know, all these tracks now are either owned by NASCAR or Speedway Motorsports, aside from a couple independents. You know, there's no longer that split between NASCAR and ISC.
Right.
So I'm not sure this instantly means that tracks are getting a lot more new revenue, but they probably have a little bit of a better sense of the long term from some of their best partners about what's coming in, things like that.
What's the reaction around the sport?
I think overall, I think most people understand the move and they support the move. I think when you look back to NASCAR's last search for a title sponsor, you know, which started essentially in 2015, then it went through the end of 2016. Before, you know, Monster stepped up and started being a title sponsor in 2017, that took about a year and a half to find a new title sponsor. It might have been even closer to 2 years. It was a very long and tough search, you know, that came down right to the end, and it was almost public about how long it was taking.
Right.
And so I think from NASCAR's perspective, they've now spread out their risk and their eggs into multiple different baskets, and they're not as dependent on, you know, the whims of one title sponsor about, you know, all their sponsorship revenue. So I think from that perspective, it's probably good. And I think a lot of teams and people in the sport think this is a good approach. Again, it's also making it easier for advertisers to navigate the sport, which has long been a major complaint in NASCAR. Mm-hmm. Is that's very complex. You got to do, you know, umpteen different deals if you want to be on all the different platforms. So I think overall, most people in the sport think it's a good thing. Again, the only thing is some people were probably hoping for, you know, new blood,
right,
so to speak, to come in right away.
A company that was saying, no, this is too complex for me, now saying, oh, not so complex anymore, I can do this.
Correct. But over time, if NASCAR is able to add that fifth, you know, new company, it's a brand new company in the sport, who's, you know, maybe they do that by 2021 or 2022.
Anything magic about 4 or 5 or 6? No, right? I mean, if you look at what this is comparable to in so many ways, it's stadiums, right? We saw a decrease in the value of naming rights, and at the same time, you started to see more of a parceling it out. And so now there are 4 gates to a stadium, 4 corners, 4 partners. Often it went that way. There's not necessarily a reason it has to be 4, right?
Correct. I mean, we were originally here and they were looking for 4 to 6. We spoke to NASCAR's Darrell Wolfe yesterday, who again was one of the architects of the system. And he said they ultimately landed on a model that would have been 3 to 5.
Right.
So now they've got 4. That's therefore implying they have room for one more.
And kind of fits the major categories in the sport as well.
Yes. And so I think, you know, ultimately there's no magic number with 4. I think they do want to keep it between 3 to 5, 4 to 5 now at this point. So I think we could see them potentially add another sponsor in time. But, you know, they can slice and dice it in a lot of different ways.
Well, they always have. They've been the king of slicing and dicing. For example, the subcategory of the subcategory of the subcategory.
And so, for example, they're going to have, like, Geico has been announced as part of yesterday. They're going to sponsor a phase of the season. They didn't announce which phase. But, for example, they're now breaking down the season into different sections. Right. And they're saying, oh, this sponsor can be the lead sponsor during those weeks. Right. You're going to be the presenting sponsor of every race for a month. And so, theoretically, if they had room for five, that means there might be another phase that's going to go unsponsored right now. So I still think that there's room for them to continue to slice and dice in different ways.
You really think we are at the point where we won't again see a fill-in-the-blank cup?
I mean, you know, these deals are 3 to 5 year terms, so they can't theoretically change it for at least probably half a decade.
Could you name the trophy without naming the series?
They could probably do something. I believe one of the companies got – I forget which one it is, but one of the four companies got the presenting rights to the trophy.
All right, well, then
it might
there
have
you
been
go.
Coca-Cola.
All right.
So, you know, they've given that asset out, but they have all sorts of different assets. It's a very, you know, complicated and item-heavy sport. It's a, you know, 36 race schedule over 10 months. So there's a lot of things that you could possibly sponsor in this sport. But yeah, I think overall, when you look back at it, they got four big companies. They got four companies that are consumer facing and like to spend. So overall, I think it's going to be really fascinating to see how it plays out over the next year or two. But it's going to have to be somewhat at least of a long term thing, because these are 3 to 5 year terms. So could they ever go back to a title sponsor? You know, ever is a long time.
Right.
But I don't see them doing it in the near future.
We talked about some of the reaction around the sport, the teams. What's this mean for them?
When they were talking to companies who also were sponsors of teams, they said, hey, if you're going to do this and it's going to affect your team sponsorship, we don't want you to do it.
We don't want you to do it. Right.
And so I think that was the big thing for teams, is that ultimately they're not part of this. Now, here's where they are part of it. Some of the companies who may come in as a second or third tier
will company, have to.
Well, no, not necessarily. They might not have to. But okay. If NASCAR brings in new companies that are attracted to this model, even as a second partner, a second-tier partner, for example, and they add a team component, then that's good for the teams. So overall, it could still be a good thing for the teams. But of course, because of the fact that you can't really have the league, you know, doing deals specifically with certain teams and then other teams never get it, you know, I think it was probably smart in the end that teams weren't officially part of this system in terms of getting assets from the sponsors. Again, you know, Geico and Coke, you know, Busch, they already do some things with teams.
Right.
So from that perspective, these guys are already doing things with teams. But again, there's not a lot of new revenue that's going to go to teams just as part of this system being set up. But over time, if more companies come to NASCAR because they like this model and add a team component, which does happen at times, then that's a good thing for teams. So overall, if you're making the sport easier to navigate for sponsors, that could have a trickle-down positive effect for teams.
We're in the silly season, right? Or I don't know, is the silly season over now? What do you think?
The silly season never ends.
Yeah, well, there we go. Those days are over? Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, you look at from a driver perspective, you know, 2019, the season was over for 3 days, and then Jimmy Johnson announced that he was going to retire after 2020. He's a seven-time champion. That's going to be a very coveted
huge.
C-Hendrick Motorsports. So even when all the driver movements of 2019 are done, we'll get right on to 2020. But then you know, from a business perspective, even more than that, you know, the 2021 schedule, NASCAR is looking to unveil that April 1st. So if they're looking to unveil a very changed schedule by April 1st, that means they're deep in conversations literally as we speak. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot to dig into.
All right. Well, you're going to keep digging, and we're going to be listening. Adam, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for this week. For Abe Madcore, Adam Stern, and our producer, Chris Mason, I'm Bill King, and this has been First Look.